From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this is Politically Georgia. I'm Patricia Murphy. Just after he arrived in Atlanta for a multi-million-dollar fundraiser Wednesday, former President Donald Trump said the Arizona Supreme Court went too far this week in its decision that all but banned abortions in that state. He called on GOP lawmakers to find a quick remedy for the restrictions, and he reiterated his position that abortion policy should be left to the states.
I'm Greg Bluestein. Trump also asserted that President Biden has, in his words, abandoned Israel in its war with Hamas. And he repeated a controversial remark that any Jewish person who votes for Biden should have his head examined.
I'm Bill Nygut. We'll get a response to Trump's remarks and hear about the Biden campaign's plans for mobilizing Georgia voters when we talk with President Biden's senior Georgia advisor, Joan A. Wortel.
We invite you to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, so you never miss an episode of Politically Georgia.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Hip-hop is a product of black people. It's a product of black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.
Guys, we are 1 week away from our Athens trip. We are going to be doing a live Politically Georgia event at the University of Georgia on the 18th of April. And we'll be there, and we're going to have a special guest. Greg, would you like to say who that special guest is?
We're going to have Governor Brian Kemp in his hometown of Athens. And we'll be grilling him on all sorts of different issues. And by then, we should probably be in the heat of the bill signing season. It hasn't really ramped up yet, but we expect the governor to start really signing some bills next week as well.
Yeah, Bill, we will have a lot to talk to the governor about.
Really a ton of things. And, you know, I was thinking about the fact that Greg Bluestein will look for any excuse to get back to Athens, Georgia, that next Thursday night. He'll be there to do this show.
It's true.
Bill, you're exactly right. I mean, I know we were talking internally about who's staying overnight and who's not. And a bunch of you guys had to go back home, and I said, I am definitely staying overnight.
I will be back to pick up Little League practice. So I'll be hitting the road pretty quick. No offense to anybody in Athens. What a great college town. So if you would like to go to the event, all are welcome, all are invited. Just go to live.ajc.com. to get tickets. You don't even have to be an AJC subscriber, but we do highly recommend being an AJC subscriber. But to get tickets, go to live.ajc.com. And that event is also being co-sponsored by the Grady College of Journalism and the University of Georgia's Guy Sipa.
SPIA.
Greg, spell it out for me. Literally spell it
out
for me.
Yeah, it's the UGA SPIA. It's the School of I should know this, public and international affairs, and I'm a graduate of both of those schools of the Grady Journalism.
My son's a graduate of the School of International Affairs. How do you like that?
I love it. Well, they've got some terrific classes and terrific students, so we hope that we'll see some students there as well. Well, absolutely, one of our top topics there at Athens will be the presidential campaign here in Georgia. And Greg, you and I were both covering different legs of Donald Trump's trip here to Georgia yesterday. I was standing outside on a windy tarmac for 2 hours, and you were at the St. Regis.
And you probably had the better deal because you actually got to interact with the former president and hear the questions and answers, because I didn't have any access to him at St. Regis. But I did have access to the hundreds of donors who spent at least $6,600, but some of them spent a lot more than that. Some of them spent as much as $250,000 to get into that room on the second floor of the St. Regis in Buckhead.
That's incredible. What is so interesting that when President Trump comes to town, the former president, he very frequently stops and gaggles with reporters, and he stopped and took a number of questions from reporters yesterday, Bill. The big topic, of course, was abortion, because the former president came out with his position to leave abortion to the states. He made that announcement on Monday. Within 24 hours, one of those states, Arizona, their Supreme Court came down with a decision that essentially bans all abortions. It reactivates a law in Arizona that was passed well before Arizona was a state and definitely before women had the right to vote, that bans all abortions except for the life of the mother. Now, Donald Trump's response to that, he was asked very quickly, did Arizona go too far? And he said, yes. That needs to go back to some form of reason, but it should be left to the states. So I feel like we've got a contradiction.
Well, first of all, you were part of that gaggle, which made national headlines right there at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport, in which Trump did say that. And you're right. You know, it seems clear that when Trump said, let's leave it to the states initially, he saw that as cover from not having to deal with the notion of whether he would support a national ban or serious, severe restrictions. But then Arizona comes along and turns it all upside down on him. And not only Donald Trump, but Republicans are scrambling to try to figure out how to deal with this. Yesterday, the Republicans in the Arizona legislature recessed rather than take up a bill that could have overturned what the state Supreme Court had done. And it was a real circus. Democrats were yelling, shame on you, as Republicans fled the chamber. This has become Trump's hopes to kind of hide from all of this have not worked out.
Yeah, Greg, it's been my sense that for Republicans, abortion has always been a really strong issue, especially because of their relationship with Christian conservatives. But once Roe v. Wade was overturned, it suddenly became a very dicey issue, because then it does go to the states, and then you have 50 different approaches. And some of those approaches are much more extreme than any Republicans really want to acknowledge, including President Trump.
Yeah, and we know here in Georgia, a lot of the Republicans who voted on the anti-abortion law way back in 2019 did so with the thought, at least, that it wouldn't go into effect because Roe v. Wade was still the law of the land in Georgia and the rest of the nation. And so, you know, we even quoted lawmakers, and certainly we were told privately by lawmakers who supported that reluctantly, saying, okay, well, it's more of a symbolic statement rather than, you know, our will to change the law. And then Roe v. Wade gets overturned, and a lot of Republicans, especially in more independent swing districts in Georgia, had a lot to stomach. They had a lot to answer for now, and right. And we've seen that struggle with Donald Trump and other Republicans who are faced with calls from the evangelical right saying we want more abortion restrictions. At the same time, they're facing pressure from Democrats, but also from a wide swath of voters who might not vote always Democratic, but who might be more inclined to this election cycle because they're so infuriated by the overturning of Roe v. Wade.
So, Greg, I was so fascinated by a quote you had in one of your stories earlier this week from Cole Muzio, who is the head of Frontline Policy Action here in Georgia, very, very influential conservative group. And on the topic of President Trump's statement, when he said not only should it be left of the states, but that he therefore implicitly would not be pushing for a 15-week national abortion ban, Muzio was very disappointed and called it an unequivocal disappointment among his groups and his colleagues. Do we feel like this is a fissure? I mean, it's not like they're going to vote for Joe Biden. What does it do to that relationship?
It's not necessarily a giant rift, but it is a divide. It is a friction point within the Republican Party. And we've seen it throughout the country, but we're certainly seeing it here in Georgia. Cole Muzio runs Frontline Policy. He is more allied with Governor Kemp by far than the MAGA crowd. But at the same time, you know, pushes socially conservative legislation like new abortion restrictions. And you can see the difference, right? He hasn't been pushing Kemp to necessarily, you know, he hasn't been criticizing Kemp for not going further than the 2019 anti-abortion law, but he certainly wants to see more from the former president. And it speaks to the ongoing friction within the Republican Party, especially among evangelical conservatives who have overwhelmingly voted for the former president, but are also concerned about his personal behavior, about his stances, about his comments. We heard them. Look, we heard him say this week alone, it should be up to the states, but also that Arizona should reverse its stance on that 160-year-old law. So where does Donald Trump actually stand? We still don't really know.
I thought it was interesting that the chair of the Republican State Party, Josh McCune, was with us, as both of you were there Tuesday. He said he's perfectly happy with Trump's statement, saying it should be up to the states, despite the fact that there is disappointment among, as you point out, people like Cole Muzio. So I thought it was fascinating that the chair of the state party said, I'm with him on this issue. But Patricia, I've got to wonder if in fact there's got to be some calculation by him and other Republican leaders here about how they deal with this moving forward.
Oh, I think there has to be.
Yeah.
But I think the other really live question here in the state of Georgia is, how much does this move votes in elections? Because McCune said, and this is totally accurate, that Governor Kemp signed that 2019 law, signed the 6-week abortion ban, which actually can affect a woman at 4 weeks of pregnancy, we should certainly say. He said, well, Governor Kemp signed that abortion ban and won over Stacey Abrams by 7 points. So where's the problem for Republicans? Greg?
Yeah, Patricia, just to shift topics a little bit, we have some breaking news in just now from our colleagues at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Bill Rankin and David Wickert, we've expected this for a little bit, but now the news has come out that Pete Scandalakis, who heads the Prosecuting Attorney's Council of Georgia, it's that nonpartisan prosecuting agency, will be leading the investigation into Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones' alleged role in the election interference case over Donald Trump. We've known for a long time that as a Republican elector, that he was being investigated by Fannie Willis and the Fulton County District Attorney, but Judge Robert McBurney ruled months ago that she was disqualified for seeking charges against Burt Jones because she participated in a fundraiser for his Democratic opponent in the last election cycle. And so we have been reporting for a long time about how very few prosecutors are willing to take up this investigation. And now we know it is Pete Scandalakis who, as the head of this nonpartisan agency, he had been tasked with finding someone to take up this. He couldn't find anyone, apparently. So now he is the one who will be investigating whether or not to seek charges against the sitting lieutenant governor of Georgia.
And there's an interesting juxtapositioning here, because at the same time, now that Scandalakis has said he'll pick up the investigation, we know that Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones has initiated an investigation with subpoena power among a new committee at the legislature to investigate Fannie Willis. So interesting friction between those completely different things that are going on right now.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a major, major development in the fact that Scandalakis had been looking for months and months and months to find the right prosecutor to do this. It was a very difficult task because our information was that no Republican DA in the state really was excited to get into an investigation of the sitting lieutenant governor. And then any number of the Democratic DAs wouldn't be seen by many people as being entirely different from Fannie Willis, that they may have a political position against the lieutenant governor. So he really needed to find the sweet spot here, and it looks like the sweet spot is in the mirror.
We should give Scandalakis a lot of credit right now, because we know when you take on this investigation, he knows that he is going to be subject to attacks, ferocious attacks coming from MAGA Republicans who are outraged that Trump and his allies are being prosecuted in Fulton County Court. He's going to be on the spot, and I think it takes a lot of courage to be willing to move forward. It's also part of the reason that he had a hard time finding anyone else to do it.
Yeah, but at the same time, Greg, he was already getting criticized for the length of time it's taken to find somebody. Yeah. And the question came up again and again, hey, whatever happened? Whatever happened to that investigation of Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones? So, Greg, I feel like Scandalakis has had to do something, and this seems to be his last best option.
Yeah, a couple of things to unpack here with this breaking story that Pete Scandalakis is going to be investigating whether or not to even seek charges against Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones. One is that it's not just Republicans who didn't want to investigate. It was a lot of Democrats, and not necessarily because they didn't, you know, believe that the Lieutenant Governor was culpable of anything wrong or of any wrongdoing. It takes a lot of resources, right? It takes a lot of time and resources away from other initiatives within these local offices. A lot of DAs are already stretched very thin around the state and didn't want to devote any more resources to this. But you're right in two, that it's going to be a lot of scrutiny, especially if they decide to seek charges against Lieutenant Governor. You could see Donald Trump. You could see a lot of his allies. I mean, look what's happened to Fannie Willis. Right, she has armed security with her at all times. Her life has been upended. She's facing racist threats and more. There's also, of course, the questions of how the Lieutenant Governor has been very, very open. I mean, in interviews with the AJC and other outlets, just saying he's been very openly upfront about his efforts to punish Fannie Willis for these investigations. And it goes beyond that DA oversight bill. Of which Senate leaders have already filed a complaint against Fannie Willis, but there's investigations into her handling of this Fulton County election interference trial. There's also investigations into the Fulton County jail itself, and all roads of these investigations are aiming to lead back right to Fannie Willis's doorstep.
Yeah, and Bill, we'll just quickly connect these two stories together, President Trump being in town and this investigation now moving into Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones. Of course, Burt Jones is a supporter of former President Donald Trump, has been involved in helping him raise money, has certainly endorsed him, was endorsed by him for his 2022 race. So they are very, very closely connected. And now I do think at least Jones will be able to put to bed this sort of looming question over him. One way or another, he has continued to say that he did not do anything wrong, nor did the president do anything wrong.
Yeah. And of course, he was one of those attending the luncheon yesterday. Yep. One of, as Greg and I discussed, one of the number of Republicans, MAGA Republicans, who were there who probably have ambitions for higher office, Greg.
Yeah, I'll be shocked if the lieutenant governor does not run for governor. I think we said yesterday on the show he's expected. It's not just likely, it's expected. And look, something like this could also help invigorate his supporters. There's a significant number of Republican conservatives who feel like these prosecutions are politicized, and he'll try to harness that. And look, but this also can invigorate Democrats and others who are trying to argue the other points, and who will say it goes beyond Burt Jones's role as a Trump elector. Right? We also reported at the time he flew to Washington back in January 5th, 2021, with a letter that he was aiming to deliver to the then Vice President Mike Pence, urging him not to go forward with certifying the election. He ended up not delivering that letter. And there was other attempts too. He was joining in on some of the calls to call a special legislative session to overturn the election results and invalidate Joe Biden's victory. So there's a lot kind of wrapped up in all this.
Yeah, there's a lot of there. But to your point, Greg, being involved and almost actually being a target of some of these investigations on the Republican right has become almost a badge of courage. So I don't, you know, it certainly has not hurt Donald Trump among his base. And we'll see how it affects the lieutenant governor as this is going forward.
We just got a statement from the lieutenant governor, and I'm going to quote him here. I'm happy to see this process move forward and look forward to the opportunity to get this charade behind me. Fannie Willis has made a mockery of this legal process, as she tends to do. I look forward to a quick resolution and moving forward with the business of the state of Georgia.
This is Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Donald Trump has been indicted in Atlanta.
We have so many court dockets to follow, but we haven't really seen anything yet.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has covered every moment of this historic case.
I've been writing about this investigation for 2.5 years.
Our team is led by reporters Bill Rankin and Tamar Hallerman. Follow our coverage on AJC.com and listen to new in-depth episodes of the award-winning podcast, Breakdown, The Trump Indictment, only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Welcome back to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Well, twice daily delivered straight to your email, you can receive the AJC's Politically Georgia newsletter. Stay on top of all the important news, scoops, and exclusives from me and the rest of the AJC politics team. Just go to ajc.com/newsletters and sign up today. That's ajc.com/newsletters. Well, we want to welcome to the show now Janae Wortel, President Joe Biden's senior advisor here in Georgia and the Georgia director for the Biden for President campaign. Janae, thank you so much for being here with us.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
So we are all familiar with you from your role in the 2021 runoffs here in Georgia. You were the director for those Senate runoff campaigns. I mean, talk about the eyes of the nation being on the work that you were doing. So I was so fascinated to see the Biden campaign tap you for this role. Talk a little bit about how Georgia is different now with this campaign that you're running versus what you were doing in 2021.
Well, the Senate runoffs in 2020, 2021 were a historic moment, not just for Georgia, but for the nation. And it was really an honor to lead that effort and to show the strength of the Georgia Democratic electorate to secure these historic victories. And what we've seen in the years since those victories, the work that Senator Ossoff and Senator Warnock have been able to do in representing Georgia in Washington, they have done some incredible work. And I'm always so proud when I see the kinds of legislation that they've supported that has not only moved our country forward, but has had real implications for Georgians. And so when we fast forward a bit, we see that like that energy that went into the 2020 Senate runoffs, we saw so many of those same voters and those same volunteers and those same leaders step up to the plate to get Senator Warnock reelected in 2022. So you see kind of that grassroots infrastructure that was built, that has been built over the last few years, really at work in 2020 and in 2022. So when you fast forward to 2024, we are obviously in a critically important election where voters in Georgia have a clear choice, a clear contrast. And I think that's the really important framing of this campaign. People say, how does 2024 look different? Well, voters have a clear choice, just as they did in 2020 when we secured a very slim margin of victory for President Biden. Voters are faced with that same decision. And so much of this campaign is about the fundamentals of organizing, just like we did in 2020, just like we did in 2022. We've got to go to communities, talk to voters about this contrast, about how President Biden is moving the country forward, how Donald Trump very obviously is trying to take this country backward, and deliver that message. I think it's also really important to talk about what the president's accomplishments have been and how the work that he and Vice President Harris have done over the last 4 years have really been transformative in progressing this nation and moving our communities forward. So it's a lot of good old fashioned organizing. The message has changed, but the methodology really hasn't changed very much.
Janae, it's Bill Nigut. I want to go right to the big political story of the week, abortion. Donald Trump on Monday saying it should be up to the states. The Arizona State Supreme Court yesterday giving a ruling that all but outlaws it, at which point Donald Trump said, well, maybe it shouldn't quite be up to the states. And I want to talk about it in terms of your campaign. There is now a $30 million advertising effort to put out front women who have dealt personally with difficulties in getting abortions because of the overturning of Roe v. Wade. The first ad, I think, has already dropped. A Texas woman who had a miscarriage at 18 weeks. She could not have the fetus aborted because of Texas law. And the ad concludes that because of what happened to her infection, she may never be able to get pregnant again. But the most important aspect of that ad is the very ending of it, in which we see on the screen what I assume was going to be the tagline for the whole campaign: Donald Trump did this. Talk about that.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the important thing to reflect on is that in the year 2024, we're having this kind of conversation. And I think it's completely appalling, and it's appalling to voters. And I think when voters look at what's playing out with this Arizona Supreme Court ruling, particularly with the comments that Donald Trump has made, that women should be punished, that people should be, you know, that abortion is something that should have no medical exceptions or considerations. Like, it's absolutely appalling. And we saw that in 2018 and then 2020, and how this has really been a really energizing issue for voters, for particularly for women. I think we're going to see that there's going to be a new energy that's going to come around organizing around this issue. So I think that, you know, it's important, one, to understand there is an extreme contrast from what Donald Trump and his allies are saying about this issue, women being punished, there being no exceptions, versus what Democrats and what President Biden is saying is that women should be able to make these choices. So when you look at this Arizona Supreme Court upholding this ban, you see that how dangerous it is. And then also you see that voters are uniquely energized by that. So I think this is just the latest in a series of decisions, of a series of political consequences that are going to be pretty extreme against Republicans and pretty beneficial for Democrats when we see folks mobilizing around this issue.
We had the chairman of the Georgia Republican Party on earlier this week, and he said he doesn't think abortion will be a top issue in November. He thinks economy, public safety. I am sure you beg to differ on that. Can you talk about how you're trying to mobilize, the campaign is trying to mobilize women, not just Democrats, right? Voters, men and women, who might not necessarily always be reliable Democratic voters around this issue.
Well, first, if he thinks this is not going to be a motivating, mobilizing issue for voters, he's not looking at any data, no recent polling, and certainly nothing from 2022. It's been shown in every study and every poll that this is a uniquely motivating issue for voters. We're talking about reproductive freedom, right? We're talking about women being able to make decisions over their own bodies. And when you think about how this is bringing in not just motivating Democratic voters, but motivating voters who may be independent, motivating voters who may have voted Republican in previous elections. I think this is a unique issue where you really bring together a coalition of folks that say, hey, I may not agree on these other host of issues, but this is an issue that I'm going to mobilize around because this is about freedom, this is about choice, and this is about women having autonomy and agency over their bodies. So I think this is going to be an issue that we're going to continue to hear about from Democrats. You're going to continue to see this being a way to appeal to more moderate voters, to independent voters, but you're going to see Republicans continue to lose on this issue because they're on the wrong side of it. They're doubling down on their extreme opinions, and they are on the wrong side of public opinion in the opinion of voters.
So, Janae, I have been surprised, honestly, by recent election results here in Georgia because, looking simply at the results and the events leading up to the election, abortion did not seem to be the big issue, particularly in 2022. And thinking specifically of Governor Brian Kemp, who signed the state's 6-week abortion ban, ran against Stacey Abrams. Those positions were very clear night and day. You knew what you were choosing between Governor Kemp and Stacey Abrams on the ballot. And that 6-week ban had already gone into effect here in Georgia once voters were at the polls in November. And I was surprised it didn't seem to make more of a difference. Kemp won that election running away, including with some women who support abortion rights. So how do you unpack that? And then how do you try and have a different result this time around?
Well, I think you have to look at what has happened since 2022, not just in Georgia, but also nationally, right? We're having a different conversation where the now Republican nominee is now having more extreme positions and making more extreme and controversial remarks since 2022, right? So the conversation has, I think, been elevated to a much more dangerous and pronounced position on the Republican side. So I think we're in a different political posture in a lot of ways, that people are recognizing that every headline seems to be how Republicans are against reproductive freedom and how Democrats and Democratic candidates are pro-reproductive freedom. So I think we're in a very clear and pronounced position between, you know, the candidates that are running on both sides. So I think that's a difference from 2022 in some ways. But I do think, again, voters are not, in most cases, single issue voters. So you do have folks looking at, you know, how is the economy growing? What has the president and vice president been able to do in terms of taking, you know, the price of prescription drugs and insulin down? So you see other issues certainly playing into that. But when you talk about what's going to be still motivating folks, it's still going to be reproductive freedom, no matter how many other issues are coming into play.
Jonae, we obviously are looking very carefully, as you are, at various groups of voters, young voters, suburban women, and the like. And one of the places where the Biden campaign seems to be struggling a bit is in terms of how the president is trying to walk the tightrope on Israel, supporting the United States' most important ally in the Middle East, at the same time being open to being very critical of how Benjamin Netanyahu is prosecuting the war and leading to the deaths of so many Palestinians who are not engaged in any kind of fight. So one of the things I've seen, and you have too, is that there are a lot of young people, progressives, who are looking at that, and they're very upset with President Biden. They've turned to become more pro-Palestinian, and I'm wondering how you navigate, whether it's young people or any other group of progressives who are worried about the president not being tough enough on Israel. How do you navigate that in a state like Georgia, which also has a very important group of Jewish voters who want him to continue to be completely supportive of Israel?
Yes, well, we obviously have a very diverse coalition of voters who are concerned about this issue from an identity perspective, from a politics perspective. And, you know, of course, the situation in Gaza is dire. You know, I've been encouraged, and I think many have been heartened to see that the president has had a more full-throated and more clear position in urging Netanyahu to take greater measures to minimize the humanitarian devastation in Gaza. And so I think that is one of the recent and I think heartening developments in how, you know, the president has dealt with that situation on a national stage. You know, when it comes to the voters, I think that we have to make sure that we're having very, very specific, direct, and nuanced conversation about voters' views on this issue. I think for a lot of folks, they would like to see, you know, the president of the United States do more. For other folks, they might have different opinions. But I think going to voters and having the conversation around why this issue is concerning to them, why they are motivated and engaged around this issue. And then, you know, to the degree that they feel like the president hasn't done enough, I think you have to hear, you have to empathize, you have to understand where their frustrations are. But when it comes to turning out in the election and making this, you know, an issue that's motivating them, I think you've got to like put it together with all the other issues that folks are uniquely motivated by in this election and say, hey, you may be, you know, you may have a certain view of how the president should be dealing with this issue, you know, but there are a host of other issues that are also, you know, going to be decided in this election. And we hope to still keep you engaged on that. So, you know, in short, I think we have to have the conversations that may be a bit tough around people who are motivated around this issue, that care about this issue, and make sure that we keep them engaged in this campaign as this issue evolves and progresses and the president's position becomes more pronounced.
Greg, let's bring you in.
Yeah, Jenny, I have more of a structural question because there's been a lot of discussion in Democratic circles about whether Georgia is going to be a top priority. Is it going to rival Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. And there was a huge step, you know, to sort of allay those concerns a couple of days ago when the campaign announced it was hiring 9 additional staffers in Georgia and opening 7 offices around the state. So what does that actually mean, though? You know, what does that mean, that voters are going to about to see a lot more activity from the Biden campaign, or is this a lot more behind the scenes? Can you kind of walk us through what these implications might have for Georgia voters?
Well, it does indeed mean that you're going to see a lot more activity. It's really creating, laying the groundwork and creating the infrastructure for us to scale our organizing program. You, of course, need great leaders at the helm of any robust organizing program and any battleground state investment. I can assure you from every conversation that I've had that Georgia continue to be a battleground state in this election. We will continue to hire organizers, open offices, and make sure that this campaign is felt in every corner of the state. What you saw in that announcement of us hiring a senior leadership team is ensuring that, you know, we have the organizing leadership, we have the communications leadership to help steer this program. And the offices, the first round of offices will help us scale. You know, so many folks are looking forward to engaging with this campaign, are looking forward to being able to go to offices and volunteer, go to offices and pick up signs, and really make sure that the campaign's presence is felt. So this announcement is an opportunity for us to plant our stake in the ground to say, hey, we're scaling this operation, and this is just the beginning. So I've been really excited about the reception to that announcement. So much outreach has come to me to say, like, when can I start knocking on doors? When can I start, you know, engaging in some of these organizing activities? And so that means our field force of volunteers is mobilized and ready. So I'm very excited.
So we know that you are an expert in organizing. I believe you even had a Georgetown discussion group on organizing for students. But tell us a little bit about organizing Black voters here in Georgia. It is such a huge, huge part of the Democratic coalition. And one difference that we are seeing right now is that Stacey Abrams and Fair Fight are not playing quite the same role in what they did in 2020. How is the Biden campaign going to organize Black voters and, you know, not only persuade but deliver those votes?
Yeah, well, Black voters are central and core to the coalition of voters that helped elect Joe Biden in 2020. And we know that without maximizing engagement with that constituency, we won't be able to deliver that victory in 2024. So we are going to take a multi-tiered approach to organizing and engaging with those communities. I think the first is making sure we have an organizing program that can knock on the doors of those voters. You know, COVID-19 last election cycle made organizing a bit more challenging, and we had to do so safely and couldn't do so at the scale that we likely needed to. But we obviously still were able to win. So we want to get back to what is central and fundamental to strong organizing programs, which is being out in communities, knocking on doors, and talking to voters. And in those conversations with voters, we want to make sure that they understand, one, what are the president's accomplishments? What has the president done in the last 4 years that has benefited them, that has benefited their communities, that will benefit them in the future if we have 4 more years of the administration. And so it's being able to equip volunteers and leaders to have the right conversations in communities about what the president's done and what the president will do if he has 4 more years. And I think beyond that, it's also deploying our leaders in communities, our surrogates, people who are trusted voices in these communities to help us galvanize that support. And we've already seen tremendous support from elected officials at our many events that we've put together, as well as them engaging in roundtable discussions and opportunities for people to come to the conversation. We want to create multiple points of access on this campaign. So I think it's going to be a multi-tiered, multifaceted approach to engaging Black voters because we know that they are key in this election.
All right. Well, Janae Wortel, State Director for the Joe Biden for re-election campaign. We're going to leave our conversation here, but we all know it's a long march to November, so we really want you to come back and keep us posted on the Biden campaign's efforts.
I'd love to. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Politically Georgia from the AJC.
Our journalists at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution are working around the clock to keep you updated on all the developments surrounding the Trump indictment. Now the AJC is putting all of our coverage in one place with our new Trump 19 newsletter. Every Wednesday, you'll have our latest coverage and analysis on this historic case in your inbox, So sign up for free today at ajc.com/indictment newsletter. That's all one word. ajc.com/indictment newsletter.
Well, we've got a great offer for Politically Georgia listeners. And listen close, because this is the South's biggest deal. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the AJC for $1.99 per week for life. Just subscribe now by going to ajc.com/start. That's ajc.com/start. It's a great deal for a greater Atlanta. And this is for new subscribers only. Bill and Greg, with the time we have left, let's talk about the ballot questions coming up on the May primary. And let's first note that with one exception, these are not binding referenda when people go in to see, when they go in and you've got your ballot and you're getting asked a bunch of questions, these are not, with one exception, binding referenda. These are sort of like taking the temperature of voters. Greg, tell us more about it.
Yeah, these are like free polls, Patricia, yeah. And the parties use them that way. And look, sometimes they come up with really interesting answers. I still go back way back when to 2012, when the Republicans put a non-binding primary question on about whether they support expanding legal gambling, casino gambling. And to the shock of, I think, everyone, including party leaders, that narrowly was a yes. So a slim majority of Republicans said they actually support casino gambling, legalizing it in Georgia. This year, they're really, both parties' questions are really tailored towards answers they want to see. So Republicans will be asked about tax cuts, new immigration crackdowns, new election law overhauls. Democrats will be asked about affordable housing, expanding voter rights, new gun restrictions, and abortion rights protections.
Yeah, in past elections, in 2022, there was a question, Bill, about Buckhead City. Do you support creating Buckhead City? Now, that was only on Republican ballots, right, not Democratic ballots. So that helps you see sort of the real purpose of these questions are political, just taking the temperature, even though people don't register by party here in the state. Once you pull that ballot for either the primary campaign, for the Democrats or the Republicans, in the primary campaign, you're going to have a chance to make your voice heard on a few of these issues.
Well, I really have a question for you and Greg about this, which is certainly what the parties hope to get is some sample size that tells them, yes, this is an issue. Yes, Republicans support a separate city of Buckhead. But to what extent can these initiatives also be used to drive your voters to the polls, or are they not significant enough to do that? In other words, if a Republican isn't planning on going to vote in a primary, would the chance to vote on Buckhead City be more likely to get in with the polls? Doesn't seem like it would.
I don't think so, because they're not binding.
Yeah.
Now, when you talk about a ballot referendum, that is a totally different question.
Right.
And so we see in several states around the country, not in Georgia this year, abortion will be a ballot referendum in some states. So that is, I think, highly, highly motivating. I think when you get into some of these local issues that are binding questions, those can definitely drive turnout. But I think I think people may not even know that these are going to be
until they
on
see
the
ballot.
For example, until this moment, I did not know there would be an IVF question on the Democratic ballot. So, you know, some of these are just, I think, special surprises for voters. But it is a great sample size, Greg, because you have all of these voters. We know they're highly motivated voters because they're already in the voting booth.
Yeah, I agree. And look, a lot of the parties and the lawmakers and the officials will use these as pretexts, right? They'll use this as more grist to push forward certain things. And I'll give you an example. On the Republican ballot, there's a very specific question involving someone who is often a guest on our show. It asks, should the legislature ban registered lobbyists from serving on the state elections board? That is clearly aimed at Ed Lindsay, and we know that there's a lot of conservative, sort of pro-MAGA Republicans who are mad that he didn't join the election board, other Republicans on the election board, in questioning or taking action to restrict absentee ballots in Georgia and the no excuse absentee ballot system in Georgia. So we know a lot of times they can telegraph the intent. So we know there'll be a big push to go after Ed Lindsay because we see this ballot question right now.
Okay. So I would really love to know, because I don't, which is the one issue that does have binding implications.
Thank you. Yes, that was a cliffhanger, I'll tell you right now. In Gwinnett County, some voters, if you live in the proposed area of the proposed city of Mulberry, there is a cityhood question for Gwinnett County voters to
Chuck
create the city of Mulberry.
Yes,
Chuck Evstration was the House sponsor. Senator Clint Dixon was the Senate sponsor of that. So if you live in that portion of unincorporated Gwinnett County, that cityhood referendum is binding and would be very important. So that's something that, and that is definitely the kind of question that would drive voter turnout in a May primary election that may not have as many big ticket items on there. We don't have any of these statewide campaigns this year. We're not deciding on governor, lieutenant governor, et cetera, et cetera. So we had a huge primary campaign in 2022, a little bit less so here in 2024, although there are going to be some contested primaries that we'll get into a little bit later. I'm sure next week and the week after we'll start to talk about the contested primaries that are getting a lot of attention.
This is why I continue to learn so much from you two when I'm on the show with you. I did not know about the Mulberry referendum until you mentioned it.
Yes, there you go. And Greg, in terms of the contested primaries, we know that we're going to have a number of sort of suburban state house and state senate seats are going to be certainly hotly contested. And then those are going to go to their general election contests as well.
Yeah, we're looking at a few primaries in particular that will already be very interesting. The 3rd Congressional District is going to be the most competitive because it's a wide open race. It's a very Republican-leaning seat out in West Georgia, but that's a big one. And there's a few very hotly contested Democratic legislative primaries, too, a couple state Senate seats, and then the House seats. Stacey Abrams' former district, Becky Evans versus Syra Draper, after that district was redrawn.
Also, on the local ballot, we're going to have an interesting look at Scott McAfee, the judge in the Fannie Willis case, who's on the ballot, has what appears to be fairly serious opposition. It's going to be fascinating because that's not a primary. That is the election for that judgeship.
That's exactly right. For these nonpartisan elections, the judicial nominations, including Judge Scott McAfee here in Fulton County, that's the election right there. Also, in Gwinnett County, school board elections have become nonpartisan, and so those will be the actual elections here in May. They will go to runoffs if somebody doesn't clear 50%. But certainly, Greg, these are really important elections, particularly when you kind of drill down into the local questions.
Yeah, and to Bill's point, we'll be watching the McAfee case very closely, but he only has one opponent now because his other opponent, one of the two opponents who qualified to run, Tiffany Johnson, was disqualified by a judge providing over that case. So he only has one opponent for now.
Okay, and another primary that I'll definitely be watching is that 6th District Democratic primary with Lucy McBath and a host of other Democrats vying for that seat, Bill.
Lucy McBath once again forced to run in a new district.
Yes. Greg, do we think this is going to be the last time for Lucy McBath?
Well, I think she's going to run for governor, so that's just me. That's just my thought. So, and they can't redraw the state lines.
Okay. Well, if you've got a question for the show, you can call the Politically Georgia hotline anytime, leave a message, and we'll play it back and answer it during our Friday listener mailbag segment. That number is 770-810-5297. That's 770-810-5297. Well, that's all the time we have for today's podcast. You can now hear Politically Georgia live weekday mornings at 10 on 90.1 WABE in Atlanta, or follow the show on your favorite podcast app and hear new episodes every afternoon. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review and share it with a friend. Join us again tomorrow for Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
I'm Ernie Suggs, race and culture reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
And I'm Ned Ravone, lifestyle columnist. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. I've been living here for 24 years, and I am still amazed at how rich the city's Black culture continues to grow. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
Like historically Black colleges and universities.
Atlanta's thriving art scene,
and the city's growing neighborhoods.
Wherever you live, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what issues are important to you.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
Only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.